You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz, and today is May 18th, 2021. Well, we've got a nice run-up in the gold price and a run-up as well with the silver price. Is it going to continue, or are we have we seen it? Have gold and silver seen their days? Well, that's a good question. And our good friend is on with us, David Morgan, themorganreport.com. And David, it's great to have you back on. We were just talking about cryptocurrencies, the rise of cryptocurrencies, totally eclipsed the rise of gold and silver. Gold and silver like an afterthought now. And, you know, all too often we see these parabolic moves in any market and they come back down to earth inevitably. Is there a reason why Bitcoin should be different than any other market at this point?
No, Bitcoin's a market like any market. So its market behavior is similar to the stock market, the commodities market, the real estate market. So it went parabolic, and no one knows how high is high until it tops. And once it starts coming back off, it will retrace. If you use Fibonacci retracements, you know, it could be, you know, 33% or 66%. I forget the exact numbers, but that's the idea, 50%. So when did it break out at? 10,000, I believe. So it went from 10 to 60. So that's a 50,000 move in terms of USD. So take 50,000, divide it by two, you got 25,000. So you subtract 25,000 from 65,000, and what do you get, 40,000? So that'd be a 50% retracement right there. In a bull market, these Fibonacci numbers are just a tool. They're not science. I mean, you could call them that, but they're really not. But they do most of the time help to determine where you might expect the retracement to go and then a bounce off of that. So very strong market, a 50% retracement would be very, very positive. We'll see if it holds there or not. I think we're at 42,000 or something today. I looked this morning and I forget the number.
Yeah, last time I looked, it was at 43,000, but we can easily ascertain that. It's at 43.5 right now, according to, I think it's CoinDesk. And yeah, I find that fascinating that somehow a market for cryptos is different than any other market, and that somehow it can never go down. I don't know where people come up with that. If gold and silver can go down, why can't cryptocurrencies go down as well as up?
Absolutely. Again, it's a market. I mean, there's buyers and sellers. When there's more buying pressure, the market rises. I don't care if it's automobiles, houses, cryptocurrencies, or futures. And when there's more selling pressure than there's buying pressure, the price goes down. I mean, people overcomplicate the financial markets at times, but if you stick to the basic common sense rules or ideas, then, you know, a simple, elegant way to understand a market. And that's the thing. I'll just comment a bit further. You know, let's take Bitcoin at 65,000 USD. Now, everyone, not almost everyone that has Bitcoin and looks at 65,000 in their head says, well, my God, I'm at 65,000. Look at how rich I am. But that's not how markets work. There were, let's say, two bids at 65,000. The market was getting very little volume at that price. So now any selling will take the price down if there aren't an equal amount of buyers. So now someone says, you have 65,000, I've made six times of my money in a few months. I'm going to buy that car. I'm going to buy that house. I'm paying off my student loan. I'm going to do whatever. And all, you know, there's different motivations for everybody. So now there's selling pressure. And everyone the day before 65,000 thought that's what they'd be able to obtain until the selling pressure starts. And now that the selling pressure starts, it takes the market down. And now there's someone that bought it at 55,000 and they're down 10,000 and they're thinking, what do I do? You know what? I think it's going down to 66% retracement on the Fibonacci chart. I think I'm going to cut my losses now. So there's a lot that goes into any market. It's not rocket science. It's just the way psychology works. Markets run on psychology, not on math. I had to learn that. Yes, I use math in my work, but primarily the markets are psychological and emotional more than they are logic and number-based.
I couldn't agree with you more. And because emotions really are the key trigger point on buying and selling. FOMO, fear of missing out, has made more people go broke than probably any other force in the universe, David. Because invariably, when you have FOMO, you buy at the top and you sell at the bottom. And like you said, one minute I'm rich, I'm a Bitcoin billionaire. The next minute, I'm only a Bitcoin centimillionaire. Maybe I should sell and preserve what I have. Now, got to talk about this Elon Musk thing because, you know, we're both kind of students of the market. It seems to me like what Tesla did is they took a huge position. Bitcoin went up. And if I can infer from Musk's rantings or scattered, whatever you want to call them, I think what they've been doing is selling contracts into the futures market to lock in their profits. So did they sell? Technically, they didn't, right? Because they still hold their Bitcoin. But in reality, they've locked in their profit and they can just deliver the coins. So they sold into the future market, which technically isn't really a sale, is it?
Yeah, I'll just back you up on that. Basically, they could claim it just hedged their position. They thought it got overheated. They took on a hedge position. So they didn't sell their X amount of Bitcoin, but they did go into the derivatives market and hedge that. They thought that was a high price, so they sold it. So now they're net neutral. They own X, but they're also short X. So any movement that comes down benefits their futures position, but subtracts from their core holding. So it's done quite often, and it's probably what happened. I think it's probably the most accurate take. I don't know for a fact. I'm just backing you up that you could claim, well, I didn't sell any Bitcoin. All I did was hedge my position.
Yeah, well, maybe we need to find the website, The Autistic Trader, to try to interpret Musk's movements here, or spectrum trading. I don't know, not to make fun of the affliction. It's a very serious one. But the point is, like, the guy's got to get out of the sandbox here. People do look up to him, and words do have consequences. And he's put these markets into turmoil, although I tend to think there were people anticipating his effects and profiting handsomely from it. And I guess that he's got to go talk to his CFO or the master of coin to figure out what exactly they own or they don't own. You know, the CFO's official title now is the master of coin.
Now, Kerry, if I could be so bold as to interject, and you may be aware of this, but I wrote an open letter to Elon Musk a month and a half ago or so. And in that open letter, I talked about his projects, his companies, and need for silver. And I pointed out that silver is basically a precious metal, why the word precious means what it means. And that going forward, he would be smart, in my studied view, to warehouse or inventory some silver for his solar projects and his EVs and everything else that he's doing. Most of what he does requires silver in rather significant quantities. So, of course, I didn't expect to get a direct response from Elon Musk. Who knows? I might get a letter in my mailbox from the coin master. You know, I work with Elon. He's not going to talk to you, but I will. Keep it on the QT. Give me a call at this number or whatever. I doubt that will happen. Stranger things have happened. Believe me, stuff is showing up in front of me that I didn't expect to get that was rather eye-opening. So the point being is, take his ability to move a market. Just imagine for a moment, Kerry, that Elon Musk got on his Twitter feed and said, I've decided to buy silver. If someone with that much of a following tweeted out that they're buying silver for their, you know, inventory for their future needs, Silver probably go to 65 bucks overnight. I mean, see how much it can move the Bitcoin market. And coming back to Bitcoin, when the Reddit group started, you know, everyone was talking about Bitcoin is gold 2.0 and all this stuff. I'm neutral. Look, I'm free market. You want to buy Bitcoin, buy Bitcoin. You want to buy gold, buy gold. You want to buy stocks, buy stocks. I think you should be diversified. But my point is that there's only 21 million Bitcoin available. But I pointed out that there's only 2 million 1,000-ounce bars of silver available. So there's one-tenth as much silver available than there is Bitcoin. And Bitcoin at the time was 60,000 per unit. And a silver bar was half that price, $30,000 per unit. So, you know, I just tried to equate. This is how you determine value, not price. You know, Mike Maloney is probably the best at getting people to think about what is the value of something. I'll use a current example I've used several times, Kerry. People say, well, when do you know gold's overvalued? Well, most gold bugs are well aware of the phraseology that, you know, gold coin will buy a fine men's suit in the Roman Empire and today. Pretty much true. So let's just take that as a basis. So if a gold coin will buy a men's warehouse, you know, a whole store full of suits, you can say gold is overvalued. And this is the kind of metric you really need to use to determine value, not price, especially in a hyperinflationary environment, which I doubt we'll see. I think we're going to see more stagflation where things we need like food and energy continue to go up in price, and stuff that we already have that might be improved, the new X phone or the Y phone or the bigger screen TV or the, you know, Rumba robot, you know, vacuum cleaner or whatever else is out there. I'm not against technology. I'm not a Luddite. But what I'm saying is that we'll see stagflation, which again means things we need cost more and stuff that's nice to have comes down in price.
All right. Well, you know, it's a fascinating study because I saw somewhere somebody said an ounce of silver should be $1,000. And I thought that was pretty much absurd. Because when you go back to the creation of the Federal Reserve, and we saw that an ounce of gold back then was what? It was $20 an ounce or something like that?
Yeah, the face value was $20, and the official price by the ounce was $20.67. But that's not split hairs. Let's just call it $20.
So that's up 100-fold. You could argue that prices have gone up way, way more than that. But if gold was that and silver was, what, 50 cents an ounce?
Mm-hmm.
Then if it kept up with gold, it should be, right, $50 an ounce. And if you assume that consumer price index is off by 50%, then you could make an argument for $100 silver and $4,000 gold. But it's all kind of irrelevant because the market eventually is going to set the price that that it deems the value to be, right?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Trilogy Metals is a world-class developer in Alaska's Ambler Mining District. The company already possesses 8 billion pounds of copper, 3 billion pounds of zinc, over 1 million gold equivalent ounces, and now over 77 million pounds of cobalt. Trilogy's Arctic project boasts an after-tax net present value of $1.4 billion with a 33% IRR. Trilogy is led by an experienced management team with proven success in discovering and developing projects in Alaska. The company is well capitalized, has no debt, and possesses strong institutional support. Trilogy trades on the New York and Toronto exchanges under the ticker symbol TMQ. To learn more, go to trilogymetals.com. That's trilogymetals.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Right. I'll do this quickly. I did it on another interview, but I looked at how many smartphones were bought in the world last year, and the number is 1.4 billion. So an ounce of silver right now, we'll call it, you know, $30 because the price is 28, 23 as I'm looking at the chart, but there's at least a $3, $4, $5 premium on most silver retail products. So we'll just round it up to 30. So would you buy $800? I don't know what you pay for a smartphone, Kerry, but even my discounts, it's around $800.
Yeah.
So would I pay $30 for a cell phone? Of course you would. I would. I mean, I'd much rather get it for $30 than $800. But if you paid in silver, so this is getting back to the value, the comparative value of both. So if you, first of all, there's not 1.4 billion ounces of silver mined in the world. There's roughly 1 billion. But let's say there's 1.4. So everyone that wants to could buy a smartphone for an ounce of silver. Well, that suggests for your thinking, I hope I'm not losing anybody, that the true value, if you're willing to make that swap, would be like $800. Now, that doesn't make the price $800. It doesn't. What it does present, if you're thinking, is silver undervalued or is silver overvalued? Because all the silver in the world would only buy the smartphones. Let me restate that. All the silver in the world on an annual basis would only buy the smartphone market on an annual basis. And there'd be none left over for industry, jewelry, silverware, artwork, or anything else. So I'm just pointing out how precious it is and how, again, undervalued I believe it is.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. It's just a question of how undervalued. Certainly to see it go back to its all-time high. Silver is the only commodity out there that hasn't made a new high in 40 years, right? 41 years.
Right.
That in itself is remarkable. I know we're producing a lot of it, a billion ounces, but we're consuming more of it than ever in less investment intensive areas for electronics. Like you always say, if we didn't have silver, life as we know would cease to exist. So at some point, the value has got to be realized by somebody. And if it takes Elon Musk in his in one of his rages to do it, could you just imagine? He says, I'm selling Bitcoin and stonks and buying silver and gold. Could you just imagine what that would do?
In a way, I mean, my open letter was pretty well thought out. Most people that are in our camp are pretty happy with what I wrote. The detractors and trolls, of course, can have their say. But it's not a joke. I mean, if he doesn't have enough silver going forward, he's out of business. I mean, he is out of business.
Yeah.
Unless he could substitute silver. And the unique thing about silver is there's no substitute. The substitutes in most cases are gold, platinum, palladium, which are far more expensive than silver. So you go to the cheapest. You can substitute aluminum in some areas. That's been done. You can substitute copper in some areas.
With bad results.
That's the reliability that silver does. So it's irreplaceable in almost all applications. So I will close out here, Kerry. I know we've probably gone past the required time, but I'm doing a series. I'll tip my hat to Mike Maloney with the Hidden Secrets of Money. I'm doing a series called Myths in the Silver Market. And one of the myths in the silver market is, let's go solar. Now, let's go green energy. Let's go renewable. So I made a video. It's being processed now. It's a rough draft. When the final version will come out, I don't know. I suspect within 6 weeks or so. But the idea that we could go solar is improbable under current technology conditions, because just to power all the houses in the United States would require over 1 billion ounces of silver. So basically, again, it would take up all of the available silver on an annual basis just to power 140 million households in the United States. Well, if you look at the commercial side, Kerry, it's about a 50% greater amount of electricity needed than it is for the household sector. So if you go into the commercial activity, which is, your supermarkets, your churches, your theaters, your restaurants, your office buildings, all of that stuff, you've got a greater electricity demand than you have in a regular home. And so you couldn't power the United States with solar under the present technology. I keep throwing that in because the greatest mistake made by Jerome Smith was not accounting for technological advances in the mining sector. And that's why he was able to predict that silver would be like $200 by the mid-90s. He would have been right if the mining sector didn't have a technological breakthrough that broke the 60-year ceiling of 350 million ounces of silver being mined on an annual basis. He made the supposition that that was a ceiling and it continued. He was wrong. Technology came along and it broke through that ceiling. We had vast more silver produced. So I'm very aware of that error. So I don't want to get on my high horse and say, you know, solar can't power the world, but it's got to be vastly improved technologically. And the last point, this is one of my pet peeves, and thank you for letting me go on, and that's renewable. So let's say you do power the world. Let's say that the solar panels are 1,000 times more efficient or 100, whatever it takes. You install them. Now, there's a huge sunk cost to that, you know, that's $1 trillion. I don't know what the cost is, but that's a sunk cost. So you've got to run those solar panels for free energy for 10 years. That's just a made up number, but it gives the right idea before you break even. So now all that free energy has paid back your sunk cost of what it costs to produce, install, and maintain those solar panels. Now you've got another 10 years of truly free energy, but now they're at the end of life and you have to replace them. And that's what hardly anyone in the green sector, to my awareness, has ever talked about. It's like it's free forever. No, it's not. These panels are only good for 20, 25 years. These windmills that are supposed to be good for the same amount of time are breaking down after 5 years, 10 years. And they're a mess. And it takes a lot of REEs for the wind. And also there's some pretty good amounts of REEs in solar panels as well. So I'm not against getting more efficient or getting more in line with, let's say, new energy sources. But we've got to think this through intelligently. If we just throw up our hands and say free energy and don't think it through, we're going off the cliff.
David, and that's so true for silver. It's especially true for copper. All right. Think one of the largest untapped copper deposits in the world up in Alaska, our good friends at Trilogy Metals. All right, you need like 50 projects like that to convert the world over to electric. And that would be assuming every, you know, they could, several of them come on tap every year, and you know how long they take to come online. They take like 10 to 20 years to get one of these huge copper mines on there. There's not enough scrap. I don't know where all this stuff is coming from. And then they keep erecting environmental barriers and all sorts of other barriers so that it becomes harder and harder to bring a new mine online. And then they expect this conversion to take place. This is wholly unrealistic. It's the stuff that dreams are made out of, unicorns and rainbows. I mean, they say they want one thing. And then on the other hand, they make it more and more difficult to accomplish to produce the very components that they require to do this thing. So what is it that they really want? I wish maybe you can explain it to me or somebody else out there. I'd love to know what they really want.
Well, I can't, but what I can comment on, Kerry, is how the whole social media sector has distorted reality. Most people are really brainwashed. I'll use the term. I'm not afraid to look in the camera and speak my mind. Of course, most people would just poo-poo that statement, but it's all run on emotion. It's not run on logic, critical thinking, looking at the numbers, determining what's true and what isn't. It's based on, well, I'd feel really good if everything was run off of solar. And I've had arguments on my emails, and I don't usually engage with people, but that one guy from Canada, very upset with me because I'd recommended the movie Planet of the Humans, which is done by a leftist. It's done by Michael Moore. Mm-hmm. And it really explores this green energy question and how viable it is. Well, he sent me a debunking video of that movie. And I'll give him total credit for that. I mean, the main point of the debunking was that the efficiency of the solar panels were like four times as efficient as what was said in the movie. Okay, fine. But still, you know, the basics of how much silver would it take to run the world on solar does not exist, not even close. So, you know, if you take the big picture, you think logically and you use the numbers. And again, I'll say it because it probably requires saying it under current technological conditions. But believe me, the silver industry uses the word thrift. Silver has been thrifted in the solar industry for years. They have squeezed the amount of silver per panel out as much as possible. Could they do more? Maybe. But they've squeezed a bunch out already to get the efficiency up. And I think the best solar panels that I'm aware of are only about 15% efficient. So, and they don't last forever. So again, I know we're repeating this. I think it bears repeating because people really got to understand this. If you want to have a counter view, look at Planet of the Humans by Michael Moore. Is it totally accurate? No, it is not. But it will open up your mind to give you some critical thinking about what is the real possibility of going green for our energy needs. And the answer is rather surprising for most people.
Yeah, because I believe that if there was really a dedicated project to shift humanity to green energy, we'd find other things that we could use, other ways to generate power. But right now, the best way to go green is nuclear. And if you tell that to somebody who believes in this alternative universe, they will be totally repulsed by a factual. And that's the problem, that facts become repulsive and it's better to go with your dreams than with facts. And we see this all the time throughout history. And maybe that's why cryptocurrency is so alluring, because you create like massive amounts of wealth out of nothing in record times. And it just keeps going on and on. And under that view of the universe, they're hoping that it'll go on forever. But reality eventually asserts its ugly head. And then these things come back down to Earth. So Morgan Report, themorganreport.com, that's where we find you. And everybody go over there. Make sure you sign up so that David will send you when his video is ready, hopefully sooner rather than later. If you got any questions for David, please send me an email to kl@carrylutz.com. And make sure you sign up for our free newsletter at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. David, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you real soon.
A very engaging conversation, Carrie. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.